Hello, and welcome to the Future of Learning podcast show. If you're new to this podcast, I really formulate my ideas around a quote from William Gibson. So the quote goes along the lines of this: the future is already here, it's just not evenly distributed. Because what's innovative to me is not to you, and what's innovative or new to you is maybe not to me. And so in this podcast, we explore a number of things related to learning that I hope we can turn into tangible practice. And on that note, I'm really excited about today's episode. So we've got David James, who is a digital learning strategist at Loop. Prior to this, David was director for learning and talent with the Walt Disney Company in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. And David talks to us about some work that he did through Loop with Sky. I was made aware of this work through a really intriguing Fosway Group innovation profile on Sky earlier on in this year. And the article itself really talks about the great work that Tracy Waters and the team have been doing to shift to more agile ways of working. It really focuses on tangible things that I think we can all take away. And so I reached out to David. We had the conversation. So we discussed things like how Sky have no more instructor-led training, how they are keeping e-learning courses limited to compliance training only that legally requires tracking and completion data, amongst a host of things. So thank you to David for your time, and a big shout out to Tracy and the team for the great work they've done here. All of the resources and articles, there's quite a few for this particular show, can be found in the podcast notes. But look, I hope you enjoy the show. So David, can you give us a kind of high-level background to Sky's challenges and where Loop fitted into that picture? So just describe the problem, if you like.
Yeah, sure. So you'll see from the Fosway report that there are some common challenges that the LMS that was introduced in 2014 wasn't getting the traction that that was hoped, that there were budgetary constraints, and so they were looking at ways to both enhance and support performance as well as scale that. But what isn't mentioned in the report, which I think is just as crucial, is that Tracy, the head of people development, has a strong sense of efficacy over necessarily just engagement. I'm of the firm belief that with any learning and development initiative, engagement is the absolute bare minimum. It shouldn't be the end game. If you can't get people to your class or to your content, then you can't influence the way that they're working. And with Tracy's strong sense of this needs to work, then they were open to a different approach. And as soon as you start looking at what people actually do in real life, you realize that we do online learning every single day, except we don't call it online learning. We call it reading stuff, grabbing information, finding know-how, and all of that. And so there was this heightened recognition that, wait a minute, this is going on, so there's got to be another way of doing this.
So where you mentioned it, the previous way of working wasn't fulfilling its need. In my mind then, there was an LMS in place, which was, and please correct me after if I'm wrong, just so I can make the statement, there was a LMS in place which was serving as a library, in the sense that people would digitally go in, not know where to go and find content, and part of this transition was making that more reactive?
Yeah. It's a common case, Lloyd, that we spend our time in classrooms. We need an online element. We know that because everyone else is doing that. We know that we are able to scale stuff online. So hey, let's get a system and apply it full of content. It's a well-trodden path. But if you speak to any real person in the outside world, do they want another system? And do they want it filled with generic content? The answer is no and no. But if you were to ask, do you want help with what you're trying to do at work now and with what you want to be doing at work, the answer is yes and yes.
Yeah, and you used the word engagement as well. For Tracy and the team at Sky, what would engagement have been for those guys? What is it now?
Yeah, so we've partnered with Sky throughout this journey. And at the outset, some kind of engagement and change was the desired result. In the Fosway report, you can see that that they had as much engagement in 2 months in 2018 as they had in the entirety of 2016. And they've also moved the needle on their Glint engagement scores as well. But what their mindset at Sky is that they run small experiments, and the experiments are aimed at enhancing, supporting, and guiding the way that people work. So it's about the efficacy. It's not about the learning. So when we consider normal learning measures, learning in inverted commas, we hope to get people to the platform. We hope that they've learned while they're in the platform and they may have passed the test. And in the absence of a test, we hope that they've completed it. So it's about showing up, staying to the end, and being happy with it. But what Tracy's experiments are all around is recognizing that employees are experiencing friction in their employee journey, understanding that friction, recognizing with the client themselves what it would take in order to address that friction so that they can perform more efficiently and effectively, and then run small experiments to get them there. So in the journey that they've taken, and as Sky have matured with this, they've recognized that it's not just about sending people to a platform. It's not just about profiling or campaigning around content. It's about offering value where people are working, anticipating during a user journey when people may be experiencing friction, and providing digital resources and conversations that support and guide the actual performance. So their measurement is, are people able now to do the job better as a result of what we're doing, not the simple, did they show up? Did they complete it? Are they happy? And did they pass the test?
And it sounds like, as you were describing there, those tests or the innovative approach that the team are having, it's really built on, sounds like, sound design principles. It sounds as if they're thinking about that user or that human being experiencing that training, as opposed to assuming that everyone's going to love and adore what they do.
You couldn't be more right. It starts and ends with the person. So often in learning and development, we think about our products and our content. We think about our programs that are service and a common aggregated need. It's a flagship program, and it comes down from above. Everybody is touched by it, and therefore it has worked. But when you start with real people and their real problems, not only is this more effective, it's faster, cheaper, easier, better, and less risky, because you're only solving real problems. And then you scale upwards. You scale what works rather than launch based largely on hope.
And one of the statements that stood out from the report for me, and I think it was a fantastic report, I think loads of people probably have seen it and heard of it, but if not, we'll share it after. But there was one particular statement that said, stop being all things to all people. And I really resonated with that comment. And as you were describing there, David, for me, where my mind goes to is the relationship with mandatory training, in the sense of, so I'd be interested to know the approach and the mindset to that. So is it a case of, we accept that our people have to do this, so we're going to design it in the leanest and most engaging way as we possibly can, but be honest about that conversation?
Well, I'll take you to the other side first of all. There is a mandatory element, and if you can view that user first, then it's not nearly as painful for all parties. But if you go to the stuff that isn't mandatory first, all skills training, for example, the All Things to All People is having one presentation skills course for your 30,000 people across all your different functions and levels in your organization, your communication skills course, your management development, and all of this stuff. This is all things to all people. All they need to do is book on and attend. But the opposite to that is recognizing where there is real friction. Real friction is experienced in micro moments, in situations, questions, and challenges that the users face. These are much lighter and much easier to address and more effective to address than the programs, the being all things to all people. But it does, the most important thing that it requires is a change in the conversation and perhaps the perspective of who we are. we aren't content specialists. We're not the knowledge owners anymore. That changed around about the middle of, or towards the end of the last decade, when on the way to work, I can become as expert as the trainer in a lot of respects, listening to the right podcasts, listening to the right articles. And if I read a book on the way down there, then all of a sudden the relationship changes. But if we recognize that our role is in helping to address the friction so that people can work more effectively today and achieve what they want to tomorrow, then we find ourselves changing the conversation from what would you like to learn to what are you trying to do and what's getting in the way. And this is what Sky are doing so well, and other companies are starting to as well, is stop trying to deliver and launch programs and start offering your value in a much more targeted, focused and specific way. And then, as I mentioned before, that sounds like a broken record, instead of launching or delivering stuff, you are scaling what is actually working for colleagues in one particular part or a distinct part of the business.
Do you have, you mentioned that the word friction there, and just so I'm clear in my mind, a user might have friction by going onto the platform. It might be convoluted. It might be difficult to find stuff. It might be that the contents, an e-learning package is 30 minutes long when it doesn't need to be. It could be a 5-minute video, and or like your examples there with what I presume are face-to-face training. Is that a fair reflection of the word friction that you're using?
I'd say that in one respect, when we think of learning and development products, there is an enormous amount of friction. There's friction in that the solutions are often far away in terms of time from the challenges that I face. Whether I'm transitioning into new roles or situationally, I don't feel as adept to or equipped to overcome those challenges. Being buried away in systems is one. Being in a format of e-learning is another. But those are L&D's problems. That, for me, that's nothing to do with the individual. The friction that I experience when I first start my job are, what do I wear on my first day? How do I get stuff done around here? How should I communicate? Are there any email rules? What do I do if, how do I manage someone who doesn't like me? You know, that's real friction that's experienced by individuals that you can get to the bottom of with the agile approach that Sky advocate and are now well versed in. If you can understand the friction that people are experiencing that really matters to them, then you can help address that friction with and for them. And as I mentioned before, scale what works using technology rather than deliver or present content, which in 2018, I'd say is 99% superfluous.
Thank you, and thank you for clarifying that. I fully resonate with the other examples you provided, by the way. Now, could you provide us maybe with an example or two of what you've described there? So we said stop being all things to all people and being more agile. What that might look and feel like as an example to an employee at Sky today, and how that might have changed from what it was?
Yeah, so I can't go too much into the detail of Sky because of their proprietary content, but from an ideas perspective, and I'm sure everybody will relate to this, when you first join an organization, you might get an information pack. You might be furnished with some e-learning to complete before you join, and as you join, there'll be an event that happens in which I'm sure every department from facilities to finance to HR will have a hand in making sure that their content is delivered at people. And then after completing the compliance training, you're pretty much left alone. So that's how things generally work in organizations, and may have levers or further footprints that lead you into the organization based around similar principles. But when understanding what the real friction is that people experience before they join your organization, on their first day, in their first week, in their first month, and towards the end of their probationary period, instead of considering this as a knowledge transfer exercise in which we need you to know this, we start with the person to understand what friction did you experience before you joined the organization that we could have helped you with. An example of this with a famous retail brands that we work with, the biggest point of friction and the most valuable resource to their people was, what do I wear on my first day? You can address this with a short video. You get two people, you get a man and a woman, to say, these are kind of the unwritten rules. This is what you should do. Here's some examples of what really works well. Come and have fun and enjoy this rather than be anxious about it. So there's one right there. You can have resources around how to get your stuff set up. Everybody's worried when they first join an organization that what if they end up looking stupid? So what are the expectations? How can you open the lid of your organization and let recently joined new starters say, this is what I was worried about, but this is what I did about it, so that you can address some of that anxiety? And then you can guide people. So this is what successful people do when they join the organization. This is what perhaps you don't want to do. This is how you get connected. So what you're doing is, if you can understand from the individual's perspective, the friction that they actually experienced, and you only need five people really. What we found with our clients, I think Sky brought this to our attention, was if you get five people, you get enough diversity in the room. And these are five people who've really recently experienced the pain. Any more than five, you don't really get any more diversity. But less than five, you don't have enough. So you want to understand from these people what friction they experienced. And then you want something temporal. When did you experience this? So you end up with post-it notes along the wall of questions, situations, and challenges. In terms of frequency of when people experience this, then you can address those with digital resources, or as Sky do as well, with conversations. And then you can automate those resources to go at certain times. So you've always got your L&D on autopilot. People said they experienced this before they joined the organization. So we'll send people a link and an email 3 days before they join. This is what people said they needed on the morning before they arrived in the office. So again, we can send them a push notification or an email that is going to address that friction that they experience. And then you can just drip feed this, get it on automation. And the way I see that is that you're guiding people on a well-trodden path to overcome their friction. And what you're not doing is overloading them with superfluous information that everybody in the organization would like them to know, but offers them very little value at that particular point. And what I like about that, it's what we should be doing rather than what we could be doing. The could is, yeah, we could do this, we could do that, we could do this. The should is very laser focused, and it's user centric based on their friction and what they are trying to do. And that's the very definition of traction, helping people to do what they want to do better.
I like the example there. So it's I think again the design principles are coming out, and there's a if this then this then that scenario. So if I started with the company, you know, day one might be I'm going to get like a I don't know an audio push to me or a welcome video from the CEO. Or on day two, it's just a little a bit of bite-sized information via an email, and that situation would continue based on those previous experiences. Have I interpreted that correctly?
You've absolutely, but remember that this is just an experiment. Whenever you're doing any of this, it's just an experiment so that you can collect data in terms of where and how and if people are engaging, and when they are engaging, whether this is the right time, whether they wanted it earlier or later, how useful it was, and how you can make it more useful. It's just a data collection exercise. So you start in a small experiment. When you've got it working at a level where it's a valuable product, Sky used the term MVP, but they call it a minimum valuable product rather than minimum viable product. And then when it's valuable enough, you launch it to a larger group of people so you can collect more data, because all you're ever going to be doing now is iterating this. It's providing the required value. It's actually addressing real friction, but I'm sure that there's going to be more friction uncovered as you get more people, they have more experiences, things change, but you're adding and pulling levers rather than ever overhauling or considering that a one and done experience is sufficient.
It's a proof of concept. So you're relying on
exactly.
Yeah. I like that example. And what I like about how you describe that, so Laurie Niles Hoffman, I watched a video of hers on her blog, on her website. It's very good. She talks about digital body language, and there seems to be some similarities here. So she describes learning as traditional learning, or historically, learning and development of looking at learning events like an autopsy. We wait till the end and then say, oh, that didn't work, or this and that. But have good data-driven learning, kind of you react and pivot live. And it seems as if, as you described, that approach is there as well with Sky.
Yeah, and without getting into the semantics here, we don't even talk about learning. When we talk about learning in the traditional sense as a verb instead of a noun, we think about having to memorize something and then recall it at a point undetermined in the future. It could be days, weeks, months, years. What we're talking about is if you can understand the specific challenges, questions, and situations people face and anticipate when that's going to happen based on, first of all, conversations, then real-life data, then this can pop up and help you to just do. And now we know when we've been at our most critical as learning professionals that people learn by doing. So if we can provide them with the guidance and the support at their point of need, they learn as they do. And what we're hoping to do is provide them with just enough confidence and competence to do that thing, because they'll learn by themselves. And then they can come back to this. And another point that Tracy makes in the Fosway report, instead of one and done events, you have real continuous learning. And these are repeatable actions. People can always go back and find out how to do this again. But we're not relying on learning, which is perhaps, and in some situations, the least efficient and effective way of affecting performance.
Well said. I struggle with these things to not go off on a tangent, so bear with me. I'm just trying to visualise now. Sounds like Tracy has a real philosophy and an approach, and a clear approach in the head, and it's working. I'm just intrigued in her team, let's say, what that might look like, because you might have someone who's a learning and development consultant listening to this and saying, okay, that sounds really good. What would that mean for what my job would be doing if I were working in a similar environment? So traditionally, we might be building learning courses or materials and so forth. But what would the team be doing to affect that, let's just say, on a day-to-day basis? What would their activities high level be?
Right. The most important thing is a change of the conversation right at the outset. If we continue to create training needs analysis, we will always be delivering training. So if you're looking for training needs or learning needs, you will not make this shift. What Tracy and her team have done, and people who and other organizations in this field, they're looking for real problems to solve. So there are things in supply chain. They are looking at teams who perhaps aren't functioning, results that aren't being achieved, or bottlenecks in an organization. So say, for example, you've got a telephone team and there's a new product, but it's no longer a new product. It's starting to mature, and there's enough proliferation in the market to mean that the small team that you had answering phone calls at one point are now being inundated by their colleagues who are ill-equipped to deal with the calls themselves. There is a real problem there that needs solving. So you speak with the leader in that team to understand what that problem is. You speak with enough people in who are actors in this, the ones that are taking the calls, both those who are equipped with the existing knowledge without the updated product knowledge, and those with right up to date knowledge. And then you look to find out how you plug that gap. You then work with the people who don't have the knowledge to find out the friction that they're experiencing, perhaps some of the people who do have that knowledge. So you recognize what the friction is that's been experienced, the gaps in information and know-how, and then you work with them on what they actually need in order to take that forward. And that's how it works. It's, first of all, it's all about the changing conversation. Let's take a step back. It's a change in mindset. We solve real problems, not perceived problems. Perceived problems are we don't have that program. That's a problem for L&D. That's not a problem for anybody else who is trying to do the work. So with a mindset of we're going to try to solve real problems, you need to get close enough to the business to understand where those problems reside. What Tracy points out in the report is that she makes her decisions based on data. So if someone comes to her team and says, we've got this problem, she will ask, brilliant, I'm all ears, show me the data that that's a problem. So we don't get involved in something that is an absolute waste of time, like my team need to go on an email writing course. two things. No, they don't. None of your team need to go on an email writing course. And number two, you don't know what the real problem is. So it requires an enormous shift. Now, I've been in conversations with other people where they say, oh, but that's because she's got senior level buy-in. No, it's not. It's because she's a leader. And a lot of learning and development functions miss the leadership and the vision to make these shifts. It is in the hands of a lot of learning and development people to make the shift from we're not going to be order takers anymore. We're going to change the conversation to solving real problems. But that's where it starts. What they do, and what is best practice in Agile is that they have a backlog that all of their stakeholders can see if required. Their backlog is a chart of the priorities that they're going to be addressing. The biggest priority will be at the top, and it will descend into the priority, the least priorities. So if anybody says, I need this done, they can always say, right, where is that weighted? Is it more important than what we're about to work on, or whereabouts does this sit? The priorities there aren't fixed. They're not set in stone. If you use Trello or another tool, it's as easy just to move them. But it allows the stakeholders to see what they're going to be working on next. And then they work in sprints. So they will get together. They'll talk about stand-ups. So they'll get together in stand-ups, and they will talk at the beginning of every day about what people are doing. At the beginning of a project, say the top priority, they will all get together. They will look to discover what the real problem is and an approach for this. And then they'll set a defined time in which they will sprint, and they'll sprint together. So whereas it was siloed before, and you might have had somebody in charge of core skills, of management, of leadership, of technical, they've got teams working together so that they've got, there's no single point of failure. You've got no bottlenecks. You've got an L&D team who are fixed on achieving a minimum valuable product and a validated approach within a defined period of time. That way you can keep your stakeholders engaged for long enough to know that this is going to affect the work, rather than something that, like a lot of training requests, you can throw out into the future for somebody else to solve for you. It's about running to achieve particular ends that are performance focused and not learning focused. So they've gone to an extreme in the way that they've restructured and focused directly on Agile. But it does mean that they have the right conversations. They truly affect the work. They move at incredible speed. And the stuff that they do actually works based on the problems that were presented to them. And going back to the main point, they solve real problems. You've got a backlog there, which are the biggest priorities that they could be involved in the entire business. And Sky is a vast business, but they've changed that conversation. And they're not stuck away in classrooms, and they're not administering online content that people don't want to engage with. They're scaling valuable stuff that people know is going to help them with what they're trying to do.
It sounds great. It really does. And forward thinking and refreshing. And it's good to hear specifics applied to the word agile as well, which is fantastic. I would, and you don't need to answer this, I'll just reflect on one thought in my mind, and it's about the team. So I wonder if any team moved into that scenario from an old way of doing things to a new way of doing things, there's a change mechanism that you need to take your team through. And to your point about leadership, I think that requires strong leadership as well.
Mm. And I think, Lloyd, that it does require vision, and it takes a lot of will to want to do this. And Tracy and her team became students of Agile. Now, other clients that we work with want us to do it. When they see us do it and they see the reaction of their clients in a room with us while we're talking about their real friction, their eyes lighten up and say, yeah, if you gave us that, then we'd be able to do this. There is joint accountability. There is real excitement. L&D can be observers. They'll watch us as we move at pace. We will ask to speak to local subject matter experts. They'll be on the call as well. We'll be extracting the information that's required to answer those questions, to address the friction that people are experiencing. We'll get something out the door in absolutely no time at all, and then they'll see the feedback. So L&D are sometimes passengers in this, but you want to see the eyes light up of everybody who is involved in this and see how you change the conversation from yeah, we'll do a program. We'll get some vendors. We'll do some research. I'll find out what my peers are doing in other organizations. Can I come back to you in a month? With this approach, in a month, things will be working better. It's, you know, when I said earlier, this should be faster, cheaper, easier, and less risky than traditional approaches. This is an example of that. And if you look at something like management development, where you'd say, well, you need something immersive. This is about people. Well, I tell you what it's about. It's about understanding what the job is before you're in that job. It's about being guided and supported when this is absolutely alien to you. When you're first there as a manager, this is a career change. You're no longer just a knowledge expert or a doer in this field. You've got this extra responsibility. Now, some people will read books, some people will read articles, some people will have a word with their colleagues, but everybody will make mistakes until they find a way that works for them. But not with this approach. You simply amplify what, first of all, you understand the real friction that people experience, not the learning needs in that respect. You look to address those friction points with and for the client in the context of your organization, and you guide and support people whilst anticipating the questions, situations, and challenges that they face. You bring them together for conversations from literally week one, where you can create cohorts around the gritty realities of this, which is supported then by digital resources, true flipped classroom. And then you can guide people without the burden of content, immersion, and all of that stuff, which means that people don't receive formal training for months or years after they've taken this role. So it is... It's far, all those things that I've said before about the benefits of doing it this way. But again, one of the most important parts is this is never done. That sounds scary. You're just running experiments. And the more friction that you address, the more will pop up, because all of that surface stuff that we're only just touching when we run programs, we don't get into the deeper stuff. People are figuring that out for themselves and getting their own battle scars. When we're addressing their real friction, other stuff bubbles up and we add greater value than we can even dream of today.
Yeah, I think you're right. You're fully right there. When we're scratching the surface, and like anything as well, it may be a cliche way of responding, but the context is always important. If you just try and drag and drop any model from a successful organization without knowing your context, it's not going to work as well.
Exactly. What I always say to people is that don't compete with Google. Google has got generic all sewn up. If you want to ask, what should I do in my first week? How do I address deal with conflict? All of this stuff, Google's got it all sewn up. But Google have no plans to address how do we do things here. And that, I think, is an even more crucial role to L&D. But we have to leave the generic stuff alone and start addressing friction in order to get there.
One of the other things that stood out to me in the report was there was no more instructor-led training. Can you just give us a bit of information on that in terms of how that maybe have been received, what steps were taken, how they maybe I'd say why they got to that place, but share as much as you can share.
Yeah, sure. So the main part to that was that, I don't want to put words into Tracy's mouth here, like some of the conversation we'd said, that she doesn't, and I don't either, I speak much more for myself. There's no belief that instructor-led training has been as useful as we'd hoped all along. When you run a day-long program, a two-day, three-day-long program, as an experience, people can like it and there can be a few aha moments. But why do so many trainers try to qualify the lack of impact by saying, if you take just one thing away from this from these 3 days, then it's been worth your time? In my view, I think, no, it's abundant misuse of company resources, if that's the case. When you ask people as well at the end of a training course as well, what's the most valuable part for you? I can't read your mind, Lloyd, but I bet you that more people have said to you than any other response, you know, it's great to have time away from the office to meet people from other parts of the business and to learn from each other. Yeah, I know. So why don't we remove all of the other gumph and focus on what people are really good at, which isn't the collection and the memorization of huge rafts of content, but on making connections and debate and question and challenging. So going back to the very principles of agile, and experimentation, instead of creating programs, what could they do that could add maximum value and minimum waste of time, effort, money, and all of those things? Well, we'll just have conversations. If we're supporting people as they're making transitions and as they're facing challenges with digital resources, then we could just pick them up and have regular conversations, like adults, about the other friction that they're experiencing and what else they need help with. L&D then can furiously make notes and say, hey, there's another resource. We could scale, we could answer that, we could get that in today and get that out to people. Or otherwise, they could be thinking, well, this is complex. We should have a series of conversations around this. So it's agile, again, it's responding quickly to the needs. It's person-centered, first of all, so it's about their questions and challenges. You can invite local experts into the room to share their experiences as well, rather than a sage on the stage. So it just meant that they could move fast, address real issues, and get people moving and working and acting faster than if it was a training program.
So it sounds like... It sounds like flipped learning.
It's true flipped learning, except that there isn't this undying belief in the delivery of content that is holding this back. A lot of flipped learning is, yeah, but we've got all this content. I know what we'll do. We'll put lectures up, or we'll do an e-learning course, and going, no, let's stop thinking that our stuff is so precious and that we've got this right. Let's put real people at the heart of this. Give them what they need when we can anticipate they need it. Always listen to them in terms of whether they do need it, whether we've got the right time, but invite them in to talk about this when they do need that point of reflection, when they do need this to be a conversation. And recognize that these people are working. The primary motivators for people to want to learn online at work are to do the job better and faster and improve their prospects. It's not so that they can take 45 minutes out of their diary, complete some facile e-learning course or attend a generic one and done experience and expect that things will all be better. I think that we need to shift this, and one of the big points, the opportunities with digital, and I'm not talking just about applying technology, but digital in terms of approach and supported technology, is that we can help them to do what they're trying to do and not try to create some kind of honeypot learning that they come to because we know that this is best.
Yeah, but I wonder if there is a geographical barrier for some organisations to do that. So am I right to assume that these 90-minute sessions would be, you know, face-to-face, maybe post-event to some other materials that they've gone through, but that everyone is based in the same building? Or
no, they're geographically spread as well, and where you've got people in one location, then you can do face to face. But you could do a mix of this. This could be online as well. This is remissive content. This is just a conversation point. Plenty of people have said that. Let's have a think of something really gritty. Okay, so a lot of new managers have said that they don't know how to get rid of the work. You know, they've got all their old work still, but then now they've got a team of 10 to manage as well. So what can we do? And you just imagine you've got people talking. You can easily see this if this was in a live event, how this would work. It'd be a facilitated conversation. But this could be done online as well. You've not got any slides. You've just got a forum where people can post questions. And if you've got some experienced people, say a panel in the room, or you've got people who want to share their experience of what's working and perhaps what's not, then this could be done virtually as well. So I think the most important part is that there are conversations, that this is opened up, because people can also take this offline as well and speak to learning and development. Perhaps they need more support, but the most important part is that this is up in the air and people are learning from, or creating connections and learning from their peers.
Thanks for painting that picture. That now does make sense to me. Thank you. I'm just picking my questions here because I'm conscious about time as well, and I'm kind of putting you on trial, so I must apologise. I'm just really, really intrigued and excited about when I read the report.
No, I really don't mind. I hope I'm not coming across as defensive.
No, not at all. It's really good. I think the questions I'm asking, I think people in my position may ask similar questions. I might be missing some out, but that's, as always, where I come from. So e-learning courses were kept to compliance training only. what's the, do they have a team that still build those internally? Do they, what does that look like, is what I'm trying to say.
So in terms of e-learning, it's not going to come as any surprise. I've never met anybody who likes e-learning who isn't in learning and development. And I think this is the case, not just at Sky, but anywhere else. We use mandatory e-learning as a way of trying to demonstrate understanding, just in case stuff blows up in the future. We can always say, hey, look, this isn't the organization's fault. You've completed this. So it's kind of this fail safe. You know, it's like the learning equivalent of email trails. Like, email trails aren't going to go anywhere in political organizations because, hey, I see that you've said that. So it's kind of your email trail. But it's not the most effective way of helping to instill judgment in people or having them act too differently. It's just a less painful way of L&D to deliver content. I'm not sure whether Sky develop their own stuff in-house or whether they outsource it, but I can pretty much bet my bottom dollar, not just at Sky, but in any organization that I'm aware of, nobody's missing e-learning and would quite happily not have mandatory e-learning training either. It's just something painful that people need to go through periodically, so it's not missed. But if you think, again, if we put ourselves, I always say to people, we are our client as well. If we stop saying learners and we say people, then we can hold the mirror up and say, when was the last time you went to Google and said, Google, could you find me a 30 to 45 minute animated video, hopefully gamified, that will show me how to do X? No one's ever typed that in. It sounds like the most painful experience. What we do is we ask really specific questions that are going to help us with what we're trying to do right now. And we hope that we can find something expert and credible enough that just answers that question and maybe then leads us on to what might happen next. So last summer when I was digging my patio, I didn't want a course. I watched a few videos. I found out, I looked to see which one looked most expert. I measured it out, I got digging, and afterwards I realized, okay, so now I need to lay my rock and my sand and hammer that down. So all of this stuff just led me through. Now, did I learn to build patios? Nope. Did I build my patio? Yes. It's like, so, you know, I think the world's moved on. The most important thing in learning development right now is expectations of our stakeholders have moved faster than our own practice. And all we need to do is be honest with ourselves, try to understand our clients' both expectations and points of friction. And I don't think we can go too far wrong. But if we continue to have this what I believe now is outdated belief that we are knowledge experts, and perhaps even more wrong with the advent of constant connectivity and ubiquitous information, we've realized we're not the knowledge experts anymore. So we've thought, what can we be experts in? Oh, I know, learning and everything. What are we doing? Like, what does it really matter if we understand how people learn? Surely the conversation is, how can we help people to do what they're trying to do better and help them to improve their prospects in our organization, whether they learn or not?
And maybe I didn't introduce this at the start, but I will do because I do the recording after. But in terms of your involvement from the loop, you were involved, everything you've described, you were involved with that process in terms of supporting Tracy and the team. Were there any other areas that we've not discussed that offered value from your side, David?
Yeah, right from the outset, we talked about Agile with Tracy and her team. Don't get me wrong, Tracy and her team were trailblazers here. And as I mentioned, they become students of Agile. But what we've always talked about with them is solving real problems, understanding what the client needs, understanding what they're trying to do, but they're not able to do, to take the conversation away from learning towards friction, and then running experiments to scale what works. That's what Loop is all about. When we're pigeonholed in the LMS bracket, first of all, it's very flattering because we don't do what LMSs do a lot of the time. It's a lean and very focused technology that supports an incredibly robust approach. Loop in itself is agile. It can be used to address friction and involve people facilitate conversations as well as scale resources, like you'd hope modern technology would. But that, and I think that's why we've been working with Skye from the outset and onwards here, because the tail doesn't wag the dog. When you buy an LMS, a lot of the time, procurement insists that it does everything. So you launch this thing, you fill it full of content and think, there is nothing this can't do. This can't be anything but a success. But the only thing it doesn't do is solve any problems that your clients have. When you flip it the other way around and you understand what the problems your clients have, then you can work with them on what they need and then find the right technology solutions to scale that so that everybody else benefits. The dog is wagging the tail. And again, it's a very different approach to learning solutions that is predominantly in the market right now.
Okay, thank you. I don't know how much you can share here and from what was in the article, but this approach was from 2016, if I understand correctly. We're now in 2018. Do you know any of the high-level impact statements that Skye's had? Benefits, such as high-level impact benefits.
Yes, yeah, so in terms of benefits, and you'll see in the report, there is mention in terms of engagement has increased. So they had as much engagement in 2 months as they had in 12 months in 2016. And in terms of their Glint engagement scores as well, people are scoring this more positively. But that is very surface as far as I'm concerned. The most important thing I think you should take from the report and their approach is their backlog are real problems. When something appears at the top of their backlog, whether it be around bottlenecks in their customer care department, whether this is particular friction being experienced by distinct groups of people, it's recognized that that's a real problem that needs addressing. Tracy's team work with that client until that problem is solved. So this isn't about an ROI that is magically made up and said, you know, people attended the training and sales improved by 400%. This isn't as crass as that. It's not as as simplistic. What Tracy's team have done is they've changed the conversation in Skye to help you solve your real problems. And from that backlog of identified problems with real data, they address those until the data has shown that work has improved. And that is the most important part and where a lot of learning and development isn't right now, because it's focused on programs and the link between programs and ROI a lot of the time is tenuous at best. Tracy's team are absolutely at the front line of helping people to do their jobs better.
Thank you. If I think I know what you're going to say based on our conversation, but if you had to give any advice to anyone listening in an organization who's in a similar position to, let's say, Tracy's team, what would be the things you would recommend, and maybe wouldn't be the one or two things to recommend and then the one key thing to avoid?
Right, I'll do a compare and contrast right at the outset. The first one is solve real problems. The fact that you don't have a conflict resolution program, a time management program, a middle manager program is a perceived problem for L&D. A gap in the curriculum is a perceived problem. A real problem is where your people are experiencing friction that is stopping them doing what they need to do or they want to do. So switch the conversation right at the outset. I think the second one is run experiments, not programs. Programs are heavy, they're costly, and they rarely achieve the results that are hoped for by the attendees and by senior stakeholders. If you run small experiments to see whether you can move the needle and continue to experiment until you've moved the needle significantly, until you've got a valuable product that is making a difference to the way that people are working and achieving at your organization, then you're making that shift. And the last one is scale what works, don't launch and hope. The launch of an LMS and a large top-down program are, of course, going to be measured in terms of hits and bums on seats. That's nothing to do with what we are in organizations to do, which is to help to enhance performance and develop capability. There's no other team looking after that stuff if all we are hoping for are hits and bums on seats. We've got to look beyond the normal learning metrics and the normal learning activities to achieve what our potential is. And scaling what works is, it's all the things I mentioned earlier, it's easier, cheaper, better, and less risky than spending a hell of a lot of money and time on top-down initiatives.
Thank you. I love the passion there as well. So quick-fire questions now. I'm going to challenge myself to limit the response to each question to 30 seconds, because I say this every episode and I never do it, so I'm going to do it. So what sources or resources are you learning from right now?
So my favourites are podcasts. I will tell you, Lloyd, that I'm a big fan of your podcast, of Danny Seal's Mind Chimp podcast. I love the Guardian's Long Read and James O'Brien's Scroobius Pip distraction pieces. I feel the richness of conversation is incredible. So I'd say that podcast number one.
Thank you. Well, thank you for listening to mine and being a guest today. And obviously, I love Danny's podcast, right? I think just listening to the conversations he has, I kind of find myself in that room. And then, you know, you jotting down ideas and stuff. So, and the other podcasts I haven't heard of. So maybe we can get the links for those and share those after.
Great.
Cool. Which one person would you recommend that we all need to follow on social media right now and why?
It'll come as no surprise to anybody who knows me that I believe Nick Shackleton-Jones. For a couple of reasons, I think Nick's been pushing the agenda for resources, not courses, for a long time, since 2010, I believe. He highly reflective and shares generously what he knows, but most critically, he's been a very senior learning and development leader in organisations and really knows what we are in organisations to do. So I couldn't recommend him enough, and his blog, aconventional.com.
Okay, thank you. And finally, from me, if you could change one thing about your industry, what would it be?
Solve real problems, not perceived problems.
And I think that one's come out quite clear in this recording as well. So, David, if people want to know more about you or get more information from you, where could they go?
So you'll find me on Twitter. I'm at David in Learning. I have my own blog, Modern Learning in Practice, and I'm always on LinkedIn, so you'll be able to find me there, as well as the Loop blog, which is loopwith3os.co.
Thank you. David, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and I look forward to speaking with you soon.
Thanks, Lloyd.
Thank you, David, for your time there, and another big shout out to Tracy and the team. Maybe we can get one of the guys from Sky on the show in the future. Who knows? I just want to say another thank you to everyone who's listened, and a big thank you to everyone on this 10th, proper 10th episode, to everyone who's been really supportive with their comments, to everyone who's listened to the show, and to anyone who's shared on Twitter, on LinkedIn, or anywhere else. I'm truly humbled every time someone does this. It's only 10 episodes in, and I just really hope that you guys continue to get some value from the discussions I continue to have. So my call to action this week is, if you're on iTunes, I'd be really grateful if you could leave a review and a rating for the show based on your experiences with it, maybe for this episode or for the time up to now. But likewise, if you're not using iTunes, I'd be really grateful if you could pass the love on in some way, whether that's a share, whether that's providing a rating on your own podcast distributor, I don't know. But look, I've taken up too much of your time. Thank you guys for listening, and I look forward to hopefully having you back next week.